Within the sacred pages of The Jungle Book by Rudyard Kipling, there's a tale of a creature named Riki Tiki Tavi, a mongoose with fearsome red eyes who fights a venomous snake to the death. The mongoose is described as having, quote, ivory fangs and eyeballs of flame. The snake it battles has a strike so fast that no eye can follow its motion. The other animals in the story lament the deadly rivalry between the two predators. Quote, those who kill snakes get killed by snakes. In Rudyard Kipling's tale, it is the mongoose who prevails, at least for the day. Our story today is about a very different snake and mongoose pairing. Two drag racers born as Don Prudhomme and Tom McEwen. Like Kipling's Mongoose and Snake, their battles were worthy of song, or at least a podcast episode, regularly reaching 200 miles per hour in a matter of seconds. How did two men with humble beginnings become Snake and Mongoose? Not only household names, but a household rivalry. To tell you, we'll need twin origin stories, stories that one day pit the two racers against each other on the quarter-mile drag strip. Today on Pass Gas, the story of two boundary-breaking racers who are also lifelong friends as well as rivals, who were defined in their opposition to each other, but who individually brought the sport of drag racing into the mainstream like never before or since. Who were Don Prudhomme and Tom McEwen, the men who would become known as Snake and Mongoose? Both their lives were marked by triumph and tragedy. What obstacles did they face in life and in racing? Forget Timon and Pumbaa, this is Timon versus Cobra. A natural entertainer versus a steely-eyed introvert. This is Snake versus Mongoose.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about forts.
Wait, Timon is a mongoose?
Well, he's a meerkat.
Yeah. But he's kind of shaped the same. But he just doesn't have the ivory fangs or the eyes of fire.
Yeah.
And a freaking snake would destroy Timon.
Yeah, yep. Timon's like a theater kid. Like,
yeah.
He's just going to get destroyed.
You know, meerkats
don't even
famously
get started on The Lion King.
Yeah, meerkats, natural predators, are snakes who primarily go after the young, hiding in the their burrows. And, of course, eagles above that will snatch them from the sky. Welcome back to Pass Gas, everyone. I am Nolan Sykes, one of your hosts, joined as always by the two other hosts of this program. We got James Pumphrey. You hear him giggling there.
Yeah. Take that.
Okay. And Joe Weber.
Truly fired up.
Fired up. Today we're talking about some vintage drag racing, a very common theme at Thanksgiving for my family, at least. And we'll reveal why this story is so close to me later on in this episode.
Dang,
I don't know if you guys know anything about this story. James, you watched a film.
Yeah, I watched what I think is like the equivalent of like a Lifetime movie about these two guys. So I get like some of the context. It's pretty cool. Good story. Some sad parts. There's one pretty sad part.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is also called Snake versus Mongoose. It came out a couple years ago. It's a pretty big deal in the drag racing community, at least. Not a lot of movies made about the sport. Kind of hard to make going fast in a straight line super compelling.
The way they did it was kind of interesting, though. They would like cut between the dudes in the inside of the car and then use a lot of like archival footage. Like there's a ton of archival footage. Like there's footage of almost every race in the movie.
Oh, very
cool. Which is kind of cool.
That is awesome. I meant to watch it. So
in between the like kind of like cringy acting moments, I did get to see a whole lot of 60s and 70s funny cars, which
that's cool.
Are pretty cool looking.
Yes.
Before we start, can we I've never seen a mongoose. In my mind it looks like a possum.
No.
It's skinnier.
Yeah.
Really? A weasel?
Like a weasel.
Yeah, a lot like a weasel. Like a ferret.
Cool. Well, Joe, do you need any more biology lessons?
Okay, I've never seen a snake before. If you guys could describe one.
It's like a lizard without legs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like a possum?
Yeah.
There is actually a lizard without legs.
Oh, you mean like a basilisk?
It is weird that Tom McEwen chose mongoose, a very specific animal, but then Don Prudhomme just is Snake?
Well, because Dom Perdomo didn't just decide out of nowhere that he's going to be called this thing. Like, he got a nickname in the right way. Uh-huh. Like, someone else awarded it with him because it reflected a part of his personality or his practices. Whereas, like, Tom McEwen was like, I'm going to be that guy's rival, so I'm going to make up a nickname for myself that makes sense to be that guy's rival because I want to market that guy's success and make money off of that guy.
Okay. Well, snakes are not the fastest animal on earth. Why do all racers choose snakes?
Yeah, why wouldn't you call yourself the cheetah?
Yeah.
Or the peregrine.
Because falcon. Cheetah implies that you're a cheater.
Oh, yeah. Chester Cheater really is a very unfaithful guy. Notoriously the most unfaithful of all the snack mascots, or as I like to call them, snack Scots.
I think Tony the Tiger is probably up there too. He, you know, he messes around. Yeah.
Tony the Tiger is a scumbag.
Tony the Tiger reminds me of Homelander from The Boys, if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, for you sure. Know? It's great. Yeah, right, Tony. Doth protest too much, brah.
Anyway, I think without further ado, let's get into the story, yeah?
Yeah. There used to be so many freaking racetracks. Now there's barely any.
Yep. Famously, Lions Drag Strip down there in Long Beach.
Like, I could go to that one pretty easy.
Yep. No longer there.
Actually, watching that movie and, like, kind of doing some research into these guys had me looking at pro stock muscle cars on the internet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those were the ones that would, like, do, like, the win on Sunday, sell on Monday. Those were the cars that, like, you could actually buy, were those real. Nowadays, pro stock cars are, you know, tube chassis cars with fiberglass bodies.
Tube fraffy.
Tube fraffy. Tube chassis. You know, all that. And there's not really pro stock anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, I want like a Chevy 2 with, like, tubbed rear end, big old tires.
One of our friends out there at Famoso Raceway has that exact car, what you're talking about. Chevy 2 Nova with tubbed rear end. Very, very cool car. Very cool car.
HMU when he wants to get rid of it.
Okay. The Lions Drag Strip of Long Beach, California in the 1960s on a humid summer Saturday night. It was little more than a grandstand and a stretch of pavement by the airport, but if you love drag racing, it was the place to be. The salty ocean air filled with smoke as the night wore on, the smell of burnt fuel and rubber mixed with the 150 decibel blasts of top fuel engines. After the sun went down, the cars became even more monstrous. They seemed alive, their V8 nostrils flaring, growling, roaring, and venting clouds of smoke, demanding to be unleashed.
Was this the spot that... Was the Lions Drag Strip the one that Mickey Thompson bought?
I'm not sure.
Or did he
Joe.
Just like bring it back from the dead?
That's very possible. There's Lions, because it was such a hub of SoCal drag racing back then. Like it's like a very legendary spot in the community still. And I mean, it's not coming back now, but like that would not surprise me if Mickey Thompson wanted to bring it back at some point.
No, I remember that from the Mickey Thompson podcast. He like either bought it or like reinvigorated it somehow.
Yeah.
With his fire spitting.
I feel like all like racetracks go through that phase. Like they're owned by somebody, then like they don't do well. And then either a big company, like a conglomerate, buys it and drives it into the ground, or like a racer or a group of racers, they're like, we can't let the clubhouse go. So they all buy it, then they run it into the ground.
It's very much like clubs, like music venues or clubs here in LA, you know, certain spots have like these very, you know, storied pasts, but you know, times change, trends change. The mainstream doesn't maybe, or like, you know, people, the acts that go there aren't the acts that people want to see anymore necessarily. So they,
yeah. Like, have you ever been to the Whiskey?
I have been to the Whiskey many times. I like the Whiskey though. Whiskey Go Go.
Example.
The Viper Room. It's
Viper
garbage.
That's a great example. What's the one that Lemmy was always at?
Oh, that was the Rainbow Room.
Rainbow Room. That's still I mean, people don't go there.
At least it's bigger. But. Like, the Viper Club was like a basement show in high school. Like, it was just one room, and it was like, eek, gross.
Yeah, I remember
Hey, kid. You want to see a basement show?
What's see a dead body?
What does that entail? What does that mean?
See, I was right. In 1954, Mickey Thompson created Lions Club drag strip.
Oh, he created it?
Yeah.
In 1954, wow.
I quote, I built and ran Lions drag strip for 8 years.
Damn, okay.
That's a very, like, good... but boring quote.
It gave us exactly what we needed, but not a lot of flair.
Well, speaking of lions, the strip itself was strictly utilitarian. It was a few garden hoses laid around so that racers could fill their engine blocks with water. I got to cool them down somehow. The narrow tract of dirt and a concrete barrier was all that separated the crowd from the track. Not the safest layout.
Especially when you consider these cars back then.
Oh my God. The skyline itself was industrial, dotted with warehouses and factories. By the 60s, a second generation of drag racers had entered the scene at Lions. Their predecessors were old school. They were drivers who largely got their start racing on the dry lake beds of the western states like Bonneville and El Mirage. Perhaps best personified by the already legendary and already mentioned Mickey Thompson. In the 60s, the new guys drove top fuel dragsters, increasingly powerful vehicles, way faster than any typical car at the time. And they were top fuel because they were powered by nitromethane, which is extremely volatile fuel, which carries 4 oxygen molecules with it instead of the 2 that oxygen brings with it. So it's just extreme. It explodes in the cylinder extremely aggressively. If you guys have ever been to, if you guys have never been to a top fuel event at a drag strip, even if you don't like drag racing, you must go to one sometime in your life. James, you can attest to it.
Yeah, I've been to one top fuel drag event, and like when I told people I was going, they all said what Nolan just said. There's like, you have no idea how loud they are. It's gonna be like the loudest thing you've ever heard. And I'm like, okay, cool. And they're like, the fuel is crazy. And I'm like, okay, like I've done some crazy stuff. I moved to Los Angeles with like $400 when I was 19. And it's insane. It shakes your bones.
It literally shakes your bones.
It literally shakes your bones and like makes you cry.
Yeah. Because the gas itself, when it goes through the engine, the exhaust, it is literally tear gas. I, you know, a few years ago, I used to work on a nostalgia funny car, which is basically one of these cars that we'll be talking about today. Same engines, same technology on the car, just safer. And if you're not careful and you stand, like the exhaust cloud can kind of envelop you and it'll take the oxygen out of the air. You will gag, you will cry. I almost threw up. I literally almost threw up because like I was in the plume for too long. It's tear gas.
Don't stay in the plume for too long.
Don't stay in that plume, dude.
I learned that at the vape convention.
The reason I went was to make a video called Funny Guy versus Funny Car.
Yeah.
That which never aired. We might put it up on Donut Underground or something.
Pretty good.
But like I raced a funny car on foot. And
you almost had him
like,
too.
Yeah, we were like, wait, it's very funny. And we were like waiting around all day to like do it. And finally, it was like one more pass before, you know, like he was doing one more pass and we could go and like film our video. And I forgot to put in my earplugs.
Oh, God.
Shit. Yeah. And it was like insane.
Yeah. And you raced against Cruz Pedregon.
Yeah. He beat me.
Wasn't everyone like pissed off at you in the paddock?
Yeah, I mean, I got called the... I was wearing a bunch of spandex, like running gear, and I got called the other F word.
Oh, man.
That's not very cool.
by some like 70-year-old like photographer guy.
Oh, okay, well, yeah, photographer.
Yeah, photographers. Don't get us started. What, your pictures don't even move, old man?
Anyway,
got him.
The
These cars of the 60s, they were longer, lower, faster, and lighter than their 50s predecessors, and faster was the key factor here. By the early 60s, speeds were getting close to 200 miles per hour, and in the middle of the decade, drivers were regularly beating 200 miles an hour. The limiting factors was not only mechanical, but a driver's willingness to take on the risk or perhaps ignore the risk altogether. Modern versions of these cars can go from 0 to 100 in a physics-defying 0.8 seconds. In the 60s era, these were front-engine dragsters, meaning the driver wearing a mesh face shield, goggles, and a helmet, kind of looking like a Star Wars bounty hunter, would only be a couple feet behind the supercharger that was pumping that highly flammable nitromethane fuel-air mix.
Aren't funny cars today still front-engine?
Oh, yeah. All the top fuel cars. So there were funny cars, and then there were also like dragsters. Proper term is like the long skinny boys, okay? Yeah. And front engine dragsters is what I just described. So the driver is sitting behind the engine. The rear axle, you're sitting basically on the rear axle. Where the differential is at in these cars, especially back then, they weren't really taking safety super seriously. Your balls are right next to that rear differential housing.
Oh my God. What if that just explodes?
Or your vagine.
Or that.
There's a lot of women in drag racing.
Not a lot back then. No, probably not. But now but today,
there weren't
for sure.
A lot of, if I understand correctly, there weren't a lot of women back then.
Right.
The women really shown up in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's a different podcast.
Well, that's when the music started. So the women started dancing out.
When they started music, and then the women were like, hey, well, those guys are dancing now. That? So we'll go over there. That sounds fun.
So anyway, you're sitting on the axle, basically. And then the tires, the rear wheels and the tires, like you're in your little passenger compartment. You're crammed in there, and the tires are like right next to your head, basically. Like you're just in it. And the limiting factor, really, what took them so long to break 200 wasn't the power itself, because they had no problem making it. It was that the tires could not really grip very well. So if you watch like 60s vintage footage, a lot of the time, these guys are spinning the tires all the way down the track. Like they're doing a burnout while going like 200 all the way down.
Oh my God.
It's incredible. And then, safety and all that. There's some bad crashes. A lot of guys died. And that's when the dragsters, the skinny boys, went from front engine to rear engine. They have the engines behind the drivers now. They're a lot more aerodynamic. They're longer too, more stable, but things still happen. But it is a lot safer now.
How do you not go deaf or blind in this sport?
Honestly, I ask myself that question all the time, especially like I know a lot of older drag guys that were around in this era that were like, at all these events, and something about nitro keeps these guys alive.
They're pickled.
I honestly think it's something like that.
Do they have just that like leathery, wrinkly skin?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like you can light a match off of their arm.
Yeah, it's like smoked sausage skin.
60s drag racing also saw the advent of the funny car, which is, I think, my favorite dragster. In all seriousness, funny cars are essentially top fuel dragsters with fiberglass bodies that imitate the look of a car you'd see on the road, but with like cartoonish proportions. Also, the chassis is a lot shorter, which makes them a lot more difficult to drive. The funny car label comes from the fact that looking at them often results in a double take. at first glance, they might pass as a stock car, especially back then. Back in the day, the bodies weren't like the first funny cars weren't as exaggerated as they are today.
Yeah. That's just a Toyota Sercel right there.
Oh wait, what? That's a little bit funny. Oh yeah.
Like many drag racing innovations, funny cars got their start in Southern California with the trio of 1964 Dodge Chargers. Okay, these cars were a huge hit with the fans because they're so freaking hard to drive down the track. At first, the governing body of drag racing, the National Hot Rod Association, or the NHRA, dismissed funny cars as a fad, but they would go on to endure But they were endured to go on to become a permanent part of the drag racing scene and a big part of the success of Snake and Mongoose. Unlike NASCAR.
What does a mongoose sound like? If James is Snake and he does the Snake. Like...
There's no way to know. We can't look this up. We have no idea. All right. So unlike NASCAR at the time, drag racing had no full-fledged national tour. There was no lucrative sponsorship deals either. Little to no TV coverage. It was just a diverse group of enthusiasts, many of them with a near maniacal need for speed, passionate about pushing their cars and their sport to the absolute limit. If you were one of the top names, you might get a few $100 to race at a track, but money to keep the cars fueled and in working condition was often hard to come by. The fuel was expensive. By the mid-60s, nitromethane was $5 a gallon, or about $40 a gallon in today's money. But still, like rally racing in Europe, drag racing was about as egalitarian as a motorsport could get, and like rally racing, it attracted a blue-collar crowd. The lack of money in the sport meant that something more important, glory, was the top prize to be won.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
I can't pay my rent in glory.
A popular way to win that glory was match racing. Drivers going head-to-head in a series of contests, often spread out over multiple events. Kind of like pro wrestling, there were storylines and rivalries with races lasting only a few seconds. It helped to have some off-track drama to supplement the racing. And I think that's drag racing's one of their main issues today.
No drama?
Is that, well, it's just that, like, it's all, you gotta let the drivers talk, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the problem with pretty much every sport.
I think so. I think so.
That's why I love Lewis Hamilton, but his answers are so like canned and polite, and I'm like, come on, just like talk shit about.
Well,
Bottas,
you have to remember
or,
that
like,
he,
Verstappen.
He's a Brit, so that's gonna it's gonna be kind of polite like that anyway, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you're right.
I think that's why like FD hasn't taken off. Like, if they really wanted Formula Drift to be a national sport, they should just like lean into talking.
If there's one motorsport I would compare to drag racing of the 60s today, it is Formula Drift, because it's the same thing. Like, there's not a lot of prize money in this unless you're like one of the top guys like Forsberg or Vaughn. Like, mm-hmm. You're not getting rich off this, you know.
So, you're basically trying to keep your car running all season.
Exactly, and you're going after it because you love doing it. You know, you're going to these events because you love getting sideways, and you're just trying to get a shot into the top 16, you know?
Right. Yeah, and there's like two guys who you can look at and be like, if I freaking win enough, I could be like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a great comparison, James.
Thank you, Nolan.
You're welcome.
But like, yeah, in FD, they should like even though Vaughn and, you know, Forsberg are good friends, and like Vaughn goes and swims at Forsberg's house and vice versa. I've been swimming at both those guys' houses, FYI. like, they should like create like characters where they're just like they hate each other.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like the zebra and the lion.
Yeah. Vaughn the zebra and Forsberg the lion.
I think that would help so much. Like, especially in this age of like, you know, freaking Logan and Jake Paul fighting pro fighter. Like, I don't know if you guys saw Jake Paul's call out video to Conor McGregor, but that's like one of the reasons like, I used to be really into MMA.
He's going to get murdered.
Yeah. But that's one of the reasons that like, there's so much hype around these fights, is that they just talk so much between the fights.
It's awesome. The fight matters, but the fight lasts like a night. Shit talking lasts months,
and it just means so much more when you have these storylines, you know. Anyway,
like, even if you hate the guy, you're like, oh, I hate this guy, I'm tuning in to watch him get his butt whooped. Still tuning in. They're still getting their pay-per-view money.
That's right.
Remember when he went, who the are you?
Who the are you? Who the fuck are you? I don't want to fight you in MMA. I want to do ballet.
I want to do ballet. I don't want to do rally. I want to do ballet. So just to add to that drama, these guys would have nicknames, right? So you got like Tommy, you got TV Tommy Ivo, yeah, who yeah. we've got to do.
Like, this is what they got to do in FD. It's just yeah. like the WWE. Read some of these names, Nolan.
TV Tommy Ivo, who was an actor. We've got to do an episode on him. He has like some of the craziest dragsters ever. Then you got the Greek Chris Karamasinas.
They only know you as the Greek.
The Greek. You got Big Daddy Don Garlitz. There's the zookeeper, the bounty hunter, Gentleman Joe, Roland Leung. I've met him. He was the Hawaiian. You got the Mangler. And then last but not least, you had Don the Snake Prudhomme and Tom Mongoose McEwen.
By the late 60s, Snake and Mongoose, known to their mutters as Don Prudhomme and Tom McEwen, respectively, were at the height of the Top Fuel drag racing pyramid. Nobody knew it back then, but they were in a golden era of drag that was about to come crashing to an end. Lion's Drag Strip would close in 1972, shut down after a persistent campaign from Not In My Industrial Area neighbors in the city of Long Beach. This blow was followed the next year by the 1973 oil crisis. T-shirts available now at donutmedia.com.
What a natural plug, James. Thank you.
Which forced the drag racing world to reconsider their nitro-chugging ways. Although they shared a passion, Prudhomme and McEwen couldn't be more different in temperament, background, and approach to life. When you hear their stories, it might be tempting to try and pick a bad guy and a good guy, someone to root for and someone to root against. But their story is so much more than that. If you pick a favorite, it might say more about you than either of these two drag racing pioneers. We start with Don Prudhomme, better known as the Snake. Before he was the Snake, of course, Don was just a kid. Born on April 6, 1941. By the time he was a teenager, he was, according to a fellow racer, a tall, skinny kid with slumped shoulders and a walk like he was carrying the weight of the world on his back. He had an older brother and three younger sisters, the pleasingly named Judy, Joyce, and Jeanette. The Prudhomme family was solidly working class. Don's dad had a body shop, and Don loved to hang around and help him out. Just like Colin McRae, Don's first driving experience was handling the steering wheel in his dad's lap. Don's dad would use old Dodge clunkers as loaner cars for his customers, and when they weren't in use, Don had free rein to drive them around the San Fernando Valley. Given all this youthful experience, Don remembers that by the time I got my driver's license, I was whiz. I passed with flying colors. While driving came easy, other parts of Don's childhood were more confusing. When Don was just a baby, his family had moved to Southern California from a Creole region of Louisiana. Like many Creole people, the family was mixed race. When they moved to the valley, the light-skinned family often passed as white, but not always. When Don came home from school and told his dad that a kid called him black, his dad said, "You're not black. Son, you're French Creole."
That's why I recognize the last name, is because Paul Prudhomme, the spice guy, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's actually Don Prudhomme in a costume.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What... That dude's videos are really good, though. His voice is insane.
I guarantee. Don's parents understood that admitting to their mixed race heritage would put them at a societal disadvantage in the California of the 1950s. But for Don, it was a constantly disorienting challenge to his identity. Kids would call him names and he'd fight them, then wonder why certain names kept getting used. It stayed complex well into Don's adulthood, even into the 70s when Don was an established drag racer. His response to black fans asking if he was a brother was to answer, "I'm everyone's brother." Like Wendell Scott in NASCAR, Don's ability to navigate the white world of racing was hard won, and it made him understandably reluctant to address racial issues until later in life. Interestingly enough, Don published a book in 2020 titled My Life Beyond the 1320, where he addresses these issues and more, so pick up that book if you want to learn more about it.
Maybe I'll get that from my dad.
That's fun. Teenage Don would soon acquire a Mustang motorcycle, really more like a mini bike, using it to deliver newspapers and make some money. Eventually, he traded up to a 48 Mercury, and with that car, would travel to his new favorite place in the world, the drag strip.
He'd often go with his girlfriend Lynn, later to become his wife of many decades. Prudhomme didn't just want a watch, however, he wanted a race. Don bought a 1927 Ford T Roadster and dropped a Buick V8 engine in it.
Ooh, yeah.
Like many racers of the time, he joined a car club. His was the Burbank Road King.
Hell yeah, dude.
A fellow member of
the... we start at Wakano, and then we go all the way to Islands.
I bet that's still a club, and you know they meet up at Bobby's Big Boy.
Gotta go to Bob's Big Boy, dude.
Yeah.
A fellow member of the Kings, Tommy Evo, nicknamed TV Tommy since he'd appeared in a few TV shows, was impressed enough with Prudhomme's driving to invite him to go on tour with him in 1960. They drove around the Midwest in a Cadillac limousine, towing a twin-engine race car.
That's so cool.
The experience with TV Tommy gave Don his dream. He wanted to get paid to race very fast in a straight line.
If we ever do a donut tour, we should buy like a double-decker bus and just like make it nice.
And tow low car around.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, it's broken.
Don would get his first chance on that tour. They'd reached a drag strip outside of Chicago where Evo was slotted to race against Chris Karmasines.
Karmasines. He's Greek. That's hard.
And he is Greek, and he was actually known as the Greek.
Yep.
He was the number one ranked drag racer of the time. Evo was invited to a party the night before the event at the Greek's house and generously invited the teenage Prudhomme to tag along. Don was thrilled. The Greek was his idol, and now he was his guest. In Don's words, the Greek's wife met us at the door, looked at me, and said, "Oh, isn't he cute?" I turned three shades of red. I was so embarrassed. I was the youngest one in the party. There was a guy at a bar, and he had a holster with a gun in it. Nothing happened with the gun, but it gives you a window into the kind of wild 60s scene the teenager had just stepped into. Don stops the story there, so you'll have to let your imagination take over.
And then the grill wouldn't start, and then the guy with the gun pulled it out and whipped it and shot the grill, and it started on fire.
He cooked all the steaks with the gun.
And then the woman said, "Ain't that cute?" I think she just said that about everything.
The next day, Tommy TV upset the Greek in front of his hometown ground. In a victorious mood, Tommy asked his squire, Don, if he wanted a turn in the top-of-the-line dragster. Up until that point, Prudhomme had only driven modified street cars, but he wasn't going to miss his chance. Prudhomme strapped into the car and had his first run, one sufficiently fast enough not to embarrass himself in front of Tommy and the Greek. When Don got back to Southern California, he bought one of Tommy TV's old dragsters and started to drive regularly, posting faster and faster times at the strip.
That's pretty sweet, man. That's cool. Like if Eddie like went on a tour with like Chris Forsberg.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Eddie's like 27, but like if like Jimmy.
Yeah.
Jimmy. Jimmy's like 22. And like Forsberg was like, "Hey man, you want to do a lap?" And he like drifted the car and then bought one of Forsberg's old cars.
Yeah. Which he could.
He could buy all of them. He could buy Forsberg and put him in jail if he wanted.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
In Prudhomme's recollection, being young helped. I was brave back then. I had to be crazy to drive the stuff we drove. We had no firewall in the car. You'd be sitting there and look down at your feet, and all you'd see would be the motor.
Jeez. Oh my God.
Soon word spread of Prudhomme's talent and fearlessness. He got a fateful call from Keith Black, a boat engine builder who was getting into drag racing. When he turned up at Black's shop surrounded by disassembled engines and random parts, Black offered to supply Prudhomme with a car.
You know, my great uncle and my grandfather worked for Keith Black.
That's so cool.
Really?
Down in Long Beach. My grand, both of them actually raced boats at the time.
That's so cool.
Uncle Bob was a master engine builder. So
that's a really cool tie to the story, Nolan.
Yeah.
Soon, Prudhomme got another reputation, which was for being a bit of a loner in what was often a social sport. In his words, "A lot of guys think you should be over shucking and driving all the time. I like to be alone at the races. I would just as soon sit in my truck and relax. I don't want to talk to people. If I'm beat, I'd just as soon leave the Trek. Still, it was his collaboration with the young Asian Hawaiian car builder Ronald Leung that provided him his breakthrough moment.
Roland Leung, actually.
Okay. Roland?
Roland, yeah.
It was his collaboration with the young Asian Hawaiian car builder Roland Leung that provided him his breakthrough moment. This was in the movie. Leung had built the car that he called the Hawaiian, and upon his first test drives at Lyons had crashed it. His driving career ended in one race, but Leung was a much better builder than a racer, and Prudhomme won the Winter Nationals at Pomona.
In the Hawaiian?
In the Hawaiian's car, yeah.
Ooh, very cool.
In the movie, I don't know how much of this is artistic license, but Leung was just basically like, I wrecked a car so my family won't let me drive the car anymore. maybe not because of his safety, just because I think his family was paying for the cars. So like they had a race team and they were like, you can't drive the cars anymore, man.
How sick would it be to have a race car with like that Hawaiian bread livery where it looks like a pack of sweet rolls with that orange on it?
They still bring out the Hawaiian at the at various nostalgia drag events here in California. Like there's the ones I've been to. There's the March meet at Formosa Raceway, and then the Hot Rod Reunion also in Formosa over there in Bakersfield. And there is a current nostalgia car that has the Hawaiian paint scheme that it did back then. But they also bring the original car along as well.
This thing is sick. Oh man, I just saw those pictures you posted, James.
Yeah, right.
Damn, that Charger.
I live right by the original Hawaiian roll place.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you go get freshies over there?
No.
Okay, he had a funny car and a dragster. So, yeah, they bring out the funny car. I've never seen the dragster, I don't think. The dragster version.
Leung's driving career ended in one race, but Leung was a much better builder than a racer, and Prudhomme won the Winter Nationals at Pomona. The prominent win, combined with the savvy Hawaiian branding, meant that Prudhomme and Leung's car were soon in demand at drag strips across the country. Track announcers soon started calling Prudhomme Snake, in his recollection, because I was tall and thin and quick off the starting line. Just like a snake, his strike was fast and deadly. There's also another reason. His name was hard for track announcers to pronounce, and Snake rolled off the tongue a bit easier than Prudhomme's Creole surname.
It's so easy to say Prudhomme.
It's not hard at all.
I actually mispronounced it in the beginning of this episode, so I can't really say anything.
But yeah, like, oh, there goes Don Prudhomme.
Easy.
It's a cool name, too.
Yeah.
Like, if you met someone named Don Prudhomme, like, okay, that guy sounds like a badass.
Guy sounds like he announces baseball games.
Look, it's not your last name that I'm struggling with. It's your first name. I'm just going to call you Snake.
Yeah, Snake Prudhomme. That's easier to say than Snake Plissken of Escape from New York fame.
Yeah, what kind of a hero name is that? It's Snake like, Plissken. Come up with a cooler last name, like Steel or something.
Snake Steel.
Plissken?
Plissken. Plissken.
That's like a gym teacher's name. Oh, I got Mr. Plissken at fourth period.
Fourth period. Oh, my God. He's going to make me run laps. Plissken.
Plissken.
Mr. Plissken's going through a divorce, so we got to climb rope today.
This is not a funny story by any means, but my elementary school PE teacher made a kid with asthma run till he died.
What?
Yeah. I was there. This was like 15 years after I had left the elementary school.
Oh my God.
Pretty, not a cool thing to do.
No.
Did he have to go to the jail?
I don't think so.
He should have to go to the jail.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's heartbreaking. Anyway. By itself, a snake is just an exhibit at the zoo, but Snake versus Mongoose was an event. So how was the rivalry born? It was Tom McEwen who challenged the 4 years younger Don Prudhomme to a match race at the legendary Lyons Drag Strip. He named himself Mongoose, not from any affinity with the carnivorous creature, but from a knowledge that the nickname would act as a direct challenge to Prudhomme's snake persona.
See, I'm a big fan of giving yourself. This. I'm a big fan of giving yourself nicknames.
I struggle with it because I can't toe the line between like thinking I'm too cool with it or like not trying enough. Like you have to really strike a good balance there.
I haven't really had any nicknames in my life. The only nickname that kind of stuck was in football when I was in varsity. They knew I did the drag racing.
They called you Thick Neck.
They called me Crankshaft, which I thought was great.
That's good.
But that did not last past football, unfortunately.
I've had to like come up with handles and stuff, especially when I was trying to be like a hip hop producer. And I just look back at all the like branding that I did, and it's just so cringy. Like I was Bazooka Joe for a long time.
That's pretty good.
By itself, cool, but there's already a Bazooka Joe in the hip hop world, so I had to be BZUKA Joe.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, ugh.
That's like something you'd see on like a sticker, like a, what is that called when like people like tag things with stickers?
Oh, with like the post office stickers?
Yeah, yeah. That's like a graffiti name.
Yeah.
I
wrote it like a graffiti name.
Just real quick on producer names, I was watching like, I don't know, maybe Binging with Babish or something, and whatever the channel was making Clams Casino, and I was like, that is a dope producer name. I bet no one's done that.
It's really good. Yeah.
And there's a very prolific producer named Clams Casino.
Oh, yeah. Man.
He's good.
I thought you were referencing that.
No.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's that guy's
sick
good.
Name.
Before he was Mongoose, Tom McEwen was born on January 14th, 1937 in Pensacola, Florida. His father was a test pilot for the Navy as the United States prepared for battle, but he'd never make it to World War II. 18 months after Tom's birth, his father was killed in a testing crash, unfortunately.
My mom was in Pensacola.
How is it over there?
Beautiful.
If you're in Pensacola listening to this podcast,
don't find my mom.
Anyway, that would be the first tragedy that would shape Tom's destiny, but it was far from the last. Determined to start over, Tom's mother moved to the land of new beginnings, Southern California, specifically the port town and future drag racing mecca of Long Beach. Long Beach was considered a rural place in those days. And while his future rival Don Prudhomme rode on his Mustang motorcycle, Tom rode real-life horses. From ponies, he soon graduated to drag racing, running his first sprint at the tender age of 15, debuting in his mom's 53 Oldsmobile at the Santa Ana drag strip in Irvine. His mom was unaware of the field trip. Dang, they had a drag strip in Irvine? That's pretty sick. His mom was unaware of the field trip, which was made while she was out of town. Classic. Take the mom's car to the drag strip move. He was always known for driving a huge variety of cars. His entry in the Motorsports Hall of Fame goes so far as to say, quote, "There's probably no man in drag racing history who has driven more different cars than Tom McEwen. If variety is the spice of life, Tom McEwen was an entire dang spice rack." Ayo!
AOC!
Probably slides out on little rollers. One of those cool kind of spice racks, not just one in your cabinet. Yeah.
I wanted one of those growing up.
Don't you have one? You've got like a Velcro spice rack, don't you?
Oh, I made a spice rack, but I'm talking about those like the corner ones that roll out. Oh, those are so dope. Cool.
Tom McEwen put those flavors to good use. Unlike Prudhomme, McEwen was outgoing and put more of an emphasis on the show. In his own words, quote, "A big following and good performance is better for sponsors than big wins and no following. I can think of a few competitors across motorsports that this applies to. I'm not going to call anyone out. This guy would have been a great Twitch streamer, I feel. In his early days, McEwen raced stock cars. But as Top Fuel cars gained in popularity, Tom, along with many other young drivers, was drawn to the more powerful custom-built racers. In the late 50s, concerned about safety, the NHRA actually took the unusual step of banning nitro in its dragsters.
What? They said only use nitro.
They're listening to Dom too much. Like, how do you miss the mark so hard with that line?
That was the
it's
hardest.
So weird.
That was like the hardest I think I've ever laughed on video. That was amazing. If you haven't,
it's like so many reasons. Like, which one is that from? Four.
Yeah, that's from four. Yeah,
the one where Letty has amnesia, or the one where
Letty died in that one. She's not in it.
So we think Letty's
spoilers.
Dead. Yeah, it's just like so weird. Such a weird line, and also just like a misunderstanding of like what car people think. It's like nitromethane is sick.
It's crazy that no one on set was like, hey, you know, that's actually not, we shouldn't say that.
Yeah, that's actually just very
actually
weird.
If you go to a drag strip, the nitro drivers are like the only ones that people really care about. Like they're the rock stars because nitromethane is so freaking dangerous. That's so funny. Anyway, if you don't know what we're talking about, watch this most recent D-list and you will know.
Okay.
It debuted right before this episode came out on Friday.
Whoa.
So check it out. Yeah. Isn't Andy, that prescient?
You work that calendar like a spatula.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Southern California was home to a few drag strips that defied that ruling, running so-called outlaw tracks that allowed nitromethane, baby. Long Beach was among these tracks, surprisingly, and the danger was evident. On October 22nd of 1960, a title-winning drag racer known as Leonard Harris was killed testing a car. Harris was on one of the few sponsored teams of the era, Albertson Oldsmobile, and uncomfortably, his death meant a major opportunity for Tom McEwen. Harris's spot was open on the Oldsmobile team.
Well, his first error was getting his car sponsored by a grocery store.
Yep.
We can cut that. That was bad.
I thought that too when I was reading it. Albertson. It might actually be connected to Albertson's.
Really?
I think Albertson's is a California thing.
No.
So you might be right. Yeah.
They have Albertson's in Florida too.
Well, I don't know what the hell. I was speculating. At first, McEwen struggled with the hulking front engine Oldsmobile, whose massive power required much more finesse than he was used to. Tom recalled that, quote, you had to drive that Oldsmobile by slipping the clutch and using the brake to keep the tires from smoking because it had so much power. Wow. McEwen wouldn't have to struggle for long, however, because as we mentioned, the 60s brought along huge changes in the form of lightweight cars. Tom's Oldsmobile car had a front chassis, or had a front engine chassis that was little more than a frame and a streamlined fin-like protrusion above the driver's compartment above Tom McEwen's head, which soon earned the car the nickname the Shark.
This thing is sick. Like, he's sitting behind the rear wheels.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about with those front engine dragsters.
Yeah.
So his legs, so like in that passenger compartment right there, like his feet are in front of the wheels right there. That's where the gas pedal's at and stuff.
Yeah.
But they were really experimenting with aerodynamics at that time as well. Nowadays a lot of these nostalgia front engine cars don't really bother with these kind of more advanced fiberglass compartments. They just have like just a fiberglass surrounding the driver's compartment, nothing really over the tube chassis over the head or anything like that, because it doesn't really make too much of a difference. But yeah, these things have pretty short wheelbases and they are a handful to drive, especially in that nitro class.
But what about McEwen's own nickname, the Mongoose? McEwen had watched Prudhomme gain prominence behind the wheel of the Hawaiian, becoming famous as the Snake. Seeing the effectiveness of those branding efforts, McEwen dubbed himself Mongoose, which, if you remember from the Jungle Book, is the natural-born killer of snakes. By the way, even as the rivalry grew, McEwen himself always referred to it as Mongoose versus Snake. He liked his name better in the front. That's a big, in the movie, that's a big thing they fight over all the time.
It just sounds better to say Snake versus Mongoose.
Way better.
Mongoose versus Snake, you're putting too many syllables in the front. You're front loading those syllables. You gotta do the opposite.
Yeah, also the Snake won a bunch. He won the Winter Nationals like four times in a row. And then I think McEwen only won it once.
Marketing, baby. It's all about branding.
He's the branding guy. He was basically like his manager that also raced against him.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like that.
The site for the first round of Snake and Mongoose would be McEwen's home track, the Lions drag strip that had once been managed by Mickey Thompson himself. The sequence of lights was amber, then dark, then green. McEwen had raced the track so many times that he had an instinct for when the green light would turn on versus Prudhomme, who actually had to see it. He would, McEwen would, back then there was just like a guy, is it still this way, Nolan, where there's just like a guy in the middle, right by the tree with an actual switch?
No, not anymore. I mean, nowadays, so let's talk about the Christmas tree real quick. So drag racing, of course, is, you know, both cars start at the start line, go to the finish line, whoever gets there first wins. With heads up drag racing, so you have a the Christmas tree. I'm not sure if back then they had the stage and pre-stage lights, if you can remember from the movie, James. I'm not sure.
What are those?
So those are the little, so you stage the car, so you're in like, it just like make sure you're as close to the starting line as possible. It's just a more reliable way of doing it instead of like having someone tell you when to stop, basically.
Yeah.
So you stage and then pre-stage, then you stage, and then once both drivers are staged, that's when those amber lights come on. And nowadays it's randomized, so you can't predict when they're going to come on. So neither drivers have an advantage.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's randomized when those amber lights are going to come on. And then it goes green. The trick, though, is to not go on green. You got to go, when those
right
lights
before green.
When those lights come off, it's like a weird. You got to feel it out. When those lights come off, you can hit the gas pedal, and by the time your car starts reacting, then the green will, the light will have been green, and you'll have the advantage.
So McEwen apparently would watch. So there used to be a guy standing right by the tree, like in between the two racers,
and he would watch.
And he was just like a dude with a switch, like a little box light switch thing. And McEwen would watch, like he would talk about how good he was at like reading body language, and especially at Lions, but like he, especially at Lions, he like knew the guy's body language and like his quirks.
Yeah,
and so like he could, he would know before the guy would switch.
I love how confident Tom McEwen is.
Tom McEwen is, excuse the pun, he's a snake oil salesman.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
So McEwen had raced the track so many times that he had an instinct for when the green light would turn on versus Prudhomme, who actually had to see it. After Prudhomme learned the trick for the first after the first round, he practiced the timing while he watched the other drivers, but it wasn't enough. In round one of the rivalry, the mongoose killed the snake.
It's so funny that they teed up this rivalry before they had even raced. Such a show.
Dude, it's branding, man. It's all marketing.
But the rivalry was real, Joe. Both men wanted to win more than anything else. But they also quickly realized that a rivalry could turn into a partnership. In 1969, McEwen and Prudhomme teamed up to form Wildlife Racing Team.
Oh, my God.
So sick. So sick. It would be cooler if they partied. You know, it's like, yeah, we're called Snake and Mongoose. Those things are wildlife, but also we live this wild life.
We're going on we're going to Ozfest.
Yeah, we're going to go. I got backstage patches for Stained.
Yo, dude, we're going to be hanging out with Crazy Town later if you want to come by.
Dude, Tila Tequila's coming over from the Family Values Tour. She wants to party.
You guys are always living that wild life.
Shifty Skidmore is coming.
I was in jail with a guy who looked just like him. Seriously, branding was everywhere, with the two drivers even sporting matching t-shirts with cartoons of their animals plastered across the front. These are cool. I want to get one.
Shifty Shell Shock. Shifty Shell Shock. I'm sorry. Not
Shifty
Skidmore.
Shifty Shell Shock. What a white guy trying to sound tough name.
Name's Seth. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
McEwen had more than racing in mind when he thought about Snake versus Mongoose, or as he liked to refer to it, Mongoose versus Snake. He saw dollar signs around the dueling animals. One day, he walked into Prudhomme's shop and told him, "I'm going to Mattel Toy Company to see if they want to sponsor us." Prudhomme, in his words, I thought he was nuts. The balls he had, I was still a shy kid, and I thought they'd throw him out on his ear. But he had the balls to do it.
There's no way you're going to walk into that Barbie factory and say, hey, I want a toy.
Dude, I want these Snake and Mongoose shirts. These are sick.
Yeah. McCune's balls soon turned into dollar bills. As Mattel said yes to the partnership, manufacturing a series of 164-size replicas of Snake and Mongoose's funny cars.
That's so cool.
The deal extended to the big boy cars, too, with Hot Wheels plastering their iconic fiery logo on Prudhomme and McCune's real-life cars as
well. That's so tight.
It was the first non-automotive sponsorship in drag racing history, and it changed the perception of the sport for both hardcore drag racing diehards and the general public, who suddenly knew about Snake and Mongoose the same way we know about Drake and Pusha T.
Oh, man. Pusha T murdered Drake.
Yeah.
Not even close.
The rivalry was... I guess Drake will like have to dry his tears with all of his money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, Pusha T's lame. Like, Pusha T's like drug dealer cosplay. Like, it's like you've been famous since you were a teenager.
Yeah, like I mean, that's every rapper has their like character that they play, mm-hmm. but Pusha T is like biting with his lyrics, and just like when I heard that, I was like, Drake's song is all right, and it's mm-hmm. it's got some good disses. Pusha T like is going for Drake's bones.
He literally
like, he wants to infect his bones.
Yeah, no, I mean that was like so just. It was unreal. If you know, if you guys are unfamiliar, check out the story.
I just think it's lame. I think like Drake knows who he is. He's like, yeah, I used to like I was a child actor, and now I'm the biggest entertainer in the world. And it's like,
so why would he punch down? Is the thing like he was asking for it?
Yeah, I think he's Kim Kardashian too. That's why Kanye doesn't like him. The rivalry was a huge hit, and not just with the kids. A pair of brothers once showed up for a meet and greet, one with a snake tattoo on their arm and the other with a mongoose tattoo.
Wow, mongoose, huh?
Yeah. They asked McCune and Prudhomme to sign underneath their animals, then promptly headed to the tattoo parlor to get the autographs inked on permanently. This is weird. It's a weird feeling. There's a few people with lightning tattoos. There's I've seen two Mopawa baby tattoos, and then a couple of donut tattoos, and it's like, huh?
It's
I think it's cool. It's cool.
It's awesome to like have something that like we made that people love so much that they would do that. It's also just strange. It's a strange feeling.
It's like, are you sure? I think it's like because we made it, we're like, it's not that cool.
Yeah. it's just a joke.
I guess people, I like that people think it's cool.
I think, yeah.
For the next few years, Snake and Mongoose had a symbiotic relationship, regularly competing in match races for enthusiastic crowds, including kids who are getting a chance to see their toys brought to life, like Toy Story, but with nitromethane.
Ooh.
Things soured somewhat in 1973. They made it. It's called Cars. Things soured somewhat in 1973 when Carefree Gum, a major sponsor of the wildlife team, dropped out. McCune left the team and got sponsored by the U.S. Navy, a natural partnership given his dad's service in the military branch.
Giving new meaning to Navy. Accelerate your life.
When Snake learned of this, he went out and got a sponsorship from the U.S. Army. Without informing Mongoose.
Whoa.
Now the rivals had sponsors who themselves were legendary rivals. If you watch college football, you know that Army versus Navy is always one of the most hype games of the season. They bring out special uniforms just for it. Navy's this year is like waves.
Oh, nice.
That's sick.
How wavy is that?
Is it like that
Japanese traditional wave, or is it like a normal wave?
No, it's like if you were on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the ocean during a storm and you looked straight down.
Oh, I like that.
It's cool. Like the creepiest kind of waves.
Oh yeah, I see it. Cool.
Deep water waves, baby.
Deep water waves.
Rough oceans. You don't want to see that. You don't want to know about that.
You don't want to know about that.
Snake, you better hope that basketball doesn't roll off the side of the carrier.
Snake also had the reputation for having a hot temper, unusual for such a cold-blooded animal.
Ooh.
When his mechanic forgot to replace the filter plug while changing the oil before a race, Snake was humiliated when, after he was pushed to the line, he tried to pull a burnout and a spume of oil flew from his engine, soaking the driver inside his car. That shit was hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He still wanted to race, waving his guy over to try and find the plug. If I could, I would have stuffed the mechanic's hand down the oil pipe. Use it as a plug. Prudhomme recalled, the plug or a hand was nowhere to be found, and Snake tried to get out of his car, ready to swing at his mechanic in retaliation for the costly error. The only problem was that the Snake was so slick with oil, he couldn't wriggle out of his cockpit. Aww. Every time he got a little bit out, he'd slide right back in, all the while screaming at his mechanic, who by now doubled over, not from a blow from Snake, but with laughter. This guy's a dweeb, a jerk. He's like, you messed up. You got hot oil all over your boss. And now you're laughing at him. Meanwhile, in 1974, a chance business deal would bring McCune and Prudhomme an unexpected financial boom. A man named Skip Hess had a bicycle company called BMX Products. He wanted to increase his reach by creating a low-cost brand that would focus on selling bikes and scooters to kids. And he thought the Mongoose name would be perfect. He was right. The company soon turned into a billion-dollar brand that's still sold at Walmart today. And chances are, if you were a kid of the 90s, you or one of your friends had a Mongoose.
My buddy Bergdorf had a Mongoose.
Bergdorf.
My friend Carson had a Mongoose. I had a Dino.
Which BMX company did Matt Hoffman ride for?
Hoffman Bikes.
Hoffman.
I had a Hoffman too.
Do you used to BMX?
Yeah.
Do you think you can still bunny hop?
Yeah.
I've never seen you on a skateboard. I've never seen you on a BMX bike.
Yeah, I'm old.
My first serious bike. I had a Huffy when I was a kid. I had two Huffies. And then I had a Redline, which I was super proud of. I love that thing. Love my Redline.
I was never good enough at either of those things, Joe, to translate into adulthood.
Well, the weirdest thing is I might be buying a car from a guy that sold James his first car in LA. And he said that when James went to buy his first car, his girlfriend said that he's been skateboarding everywhere. And I was like, I've never seen him skateboard, let alone use it for transportation.
Oh, I used to skateboard from Century City to Wilshire and Western train station almost every day.
That's crazy. Yeah. You and Joe Hartzler were the road warriors.
Yeah.
While their match races made them a household name, within official National Hot Rod Association events, the Snake versus Mongoose rivalry was more of a side story. The annual NHRA contest held at Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis was typically a field of the top 16 cars competing in head-to-head contests until a winner was crowned. In 1967, there's only two guys at a time, it's like a bracket at a drag event. In 1967, the NHRA finally relented to the popularity of the funny cars and added a second category for them. Of these races, Don won the main category in 69 and 70, as well as 73, 74, 77, and 89 in the funny cars.
That's a dry spell right there.
You know it, brother.
Yeah, can you imagine staying in it for 12 years of not doing well?
A lot of these guys do that. They're in it for a long time. Drag guys, they can be
not all about winning, James.
John Force was into his 70s, I think, racing. Maybe. Let's see here. Nah, he retired. Into his 60s. On the other hand, up until 1978, Mongoose, despite all of his fame, still hadn't won an NHRA title. Days before the event in Indianapolis that year, his participation actually seemed doubtful. Tom's 14-year-old son, Jamie, had just died after a battle with leukemia, no. Unfortunately. Although in previous years, Tom and Don had gone for months or even years without much contact, they'd been in touch that year with Don keeping tabs on Jamie's condition throughout the season. Despite his grief, or perhaps because of it, Tom raced better than he ever had before in the funny car division at the Nationals. Snake was also in top form, and as the heats went on, both drivers won race after race, getting closer to each other in the bracket. Finally, it was down to two cars, and unbelievably, it was Snake versus Mongoose in the finals.
Nice. They should make a movie about this.
Don set his sympathy for Tom McCune aside. In his words, quote,
"I've never thrown a race in my life. Going all out to win with all the prestige and history and money that it represented was just part of what we did. And yeah, Tom and I spent a lot of time together, what with his son being really sick and so forth. But we also battled a lot on the circuit."
Although the colorful names were straight out of pro wrestling, unlike the WWE, drag racing wasn't staged. A fact that was important to a competitor as fierce as Don. He emphasized that, quote,
"When we came to town to race, it wasn't just to put on a show, it was to beat one another. And I think that the fans appreciated that. They knew that with us, it was for keeps."
If it was for keeps at a small town drag strip, it was certainly the same standard at the biggest stage of the National Hot Rod Association, the final race at Indy. The Christmas tree went green. Snake was fast, and as a benefit of dominating the event to that point, he also had the faster lane, too. He had lane choice. But the Mongoose was faster. He won his first and only NHRA U.S. national title just a week after his son's death.
Oh, man.
The far lane was faster that day. That's what it was in the movie. Far lane faster that day.
When you have a loved one die, it just, like, pushes you into this crazy zen state, I feel like. Like, you're just trying to put it out of your head, maybe. And it, like, I heard that the night that Chris Paul's dad or grandpa was murdered when he was in high school, he scored, like, 60 points in his basketball game.
Oh, my God. Prudhomme's usual move after a race was to retreat into solitude, but after that loss, he got out of his funny car and made a beeline straight for Tom's car. With the bodywork up and Tom still in the seat, there's a video of Prudhomme leaning under the fiberglass body and sharing words with McEwen. It's unclear what was said, but the simple act of congratulating and consoling his greatest rival spoke volumes. When McEwen finally got out of his car, he clearly couldn't speak, and as his crew embraced him, countless complex emotions played across his typically carefree face. Prudhomme walked off quickly, leaving the man to his victory and his sorrow, but the connection had been there for all to see. In 2018, Tom McEwen passed away at the age of 81. Countless drivers and people Tom had interacted with over the years spoke out about the greatness of the Mongoose, who had lived life to the fullest and brought notoriety, money, but most importantly, fun to drag racing. But it was his old rival and partner Don Prudhomme's words that probably had the most impact. In the end, it wasn't the rivalry that Don remembered, but the friendship. These were Don's words on his relationship with Tom. Quote,
"We'd argue like cats and dogs, but when it came time to stick up for each other, if someone had said something bad about the other one, we were ready to fight for each other. It's the end of an era. He was a guy who did so much for drag racing, showed so many people how to get sponsorship and bring them into NHRA. I hope it goes into the history books that he was the guy who did that. I'm going to deeply miss him. It's a sad day."
We've all had someone in life who challenges us, who sometimes makes us mad, but always makes us better, who loves the same stuff as we do, but just has a different perspective on it. A perspective that in time we realize has added a whole new dimension to our own lives. A little tension, a little competition, and a ton of love and respect is what makes friendly rivalries like that of Don Prudhomme and Tom McEwen, Snake and Mongoose, truly great. So, if you haven't already found them, go out there and find the Snake to your Mongoose, the Mongoose to your Snake. Maybe if your exploits are great enough, a bird will sing of your exploits like in the Jungle Book. Maybe we'll make a Pass Gas episode with your name on it.
You see this a lot. Like, we saw it with, like, Prost and Senna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think at a certain point when you're just so good at something, like, you're at the top of this, like, mountain kind of alone. And if someone else is up there with you, you have more in common with this person that you're competing with than almost anybody else in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and you kind of, like, it feels like they kind of hate it because they're a lot of times alphas and they, like, hate to share the spotlight, but they also need that person to push them beyond their limits.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they wouldn't be as good if it weren't.
For sure.
For that person.
Hmm. To that end, what is the cobra's natural rival?
Oh.
The mongoose?
Yeah, mongoose fights all snakes.
Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. I certainly learned a lot about drag racing history. I hear about this stuff, okay, like every time I go home, every time I go to Thanksgiving, I hear about this scene pretty much nonstop. So it's cool to be able to share that.
I
want to
go to Thanksgiving with your family. I think it'd be really fun. And polite. You seem like you have a polite family.
We'd love to have you. I don't know. I love doing this show. I say that every week, but just thanks for the opportunity to let us regale you with stories like this one.
If you like listening to this podcast, do us a favor and tell a friend who likes to hear some car history stuff and a whole lot of bull.
Yeah.
Sorry
yeah.
for the people who really love the car history stuff and don't really care for the banter. We're going to keep doing it, so I'm apologizing for future episodes.
Bants and bits.
Yeah, if you have a friend who kind of likes cars but also knows who Shifty Shellshock is, this is the show for them.
Yeah, yeah, car stuff and lots of new metal references.
As always, subscribe to the channel. Follow us at Donut Media. Follow the boys at James Humphrey and Joe G. Weber. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like. In the meantime, till next time, be kind.
I love you.
Keep it juiced.
Keep it juiced fired up.